Moncrief on News Talk.
96% of fireworks in the US, including those used in Independence Day celebrations, are imported from China. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. Now, recently we were talking about how in court cases concerning sexual violence, if the complainant has gone for counselling, the notes from those counselling sessions can be introduced into evidence. The government has said it will amend the law in this area, but does that necessarily mean a total ban? We're joined by Dr. Susan Leahy from the School of Law at the University of Limerick. Good afternoon, Susan.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Could you just run us through what are the regulations in terms of using this information as they stand now?
Okay, so at present, if you have had counselling and the Gardaí or the Office of the DPP are aware of it, they will ask you if you wish to give your consent to have your notes disclosed. You, at that stage, can refuse to disclose your notes. If you do so, there will be a hearing with a judge, ideally a pre-trial hearing, to determine if your notes should be disclosed. A judge then will decide, based on legislative criteria, whether what is in the notes is relevant or not and should be disclosed to the defence. The issue with the law at present, though, is that there is a process where you can obviously consent to disclosure of your notes, which we call waiver. And in that instance, there isn't a hearing in relation to disclosure. So a judge doesn't, I suppose, make a decision on what aspects of the notes will be seen by the defence.
And why would the complainant agree to the waiver?
So I guess the research I did with legal professionals, which was published in 2021, the legal professionals said to me that a lot of complainants waive because they don't want any delays. So they waive because they feel, look, I'll hand my notes over because I don't want a delay that might occur because we have to have a special hearing about this. I also think maybe, and this is just my own personal opinion, that maybe complainants think, well, look, I've nothing to hide. I'm going to give my notes to the defence, and maybe they don't fully think about or maybe aren't always fully informed about what uses those notes may be put to in a trial.
Mm. At that stage, are they given legal advice as to what possible uses those notes could be put to?
They get an information leaflet. So it depends on at what stage they're asked. My instinct is that usually they're asked quite early in the process. So certainly the investigating Gardaí will explain their rights to them. They will get an information sheet. They won't have free legal advice at that stage. The legal representation kicks in when if there is a disclosure hearing. Of course, any complainant is at any stage free to go and get legal advice for themselves. So and most complainants would, they would look at their notes and they might discuss it with their counsellor as well, maybe about the contents of their notes.
Mm. And at the disclosure hearing, is it, pardon the pun, disclosed what's in the notes so the judge can make a determination as to whether it's relevant or not?
Well, the trial judge would need to look at the notes,
yeah.
Him or herself, to decide. I guess if the defence are making an application for the notes, they should have some idea of what they expect to see. So it shouldn't be what we'd call a fishing expedition, just, I know there's notes there, so can we see them, please? They should be saying, well, we're expecting to see something that might contradict what is in the police statement, for example, or something about the allegation in the notes. I guess the bigger point here, though, in all of this is, are counselling notes, do they ever have a place in these cases? Are they good evidence? I would argue, and in my research, I argue that really they're not good evidence because they're not like a statement you make to the Gardaí where that's read back to you and you verify everything you've said in it. Counselling is about exploring what happened to you in a private setting. You don't expect that to be part of a trial later on down the line. And it's the counsellor's interpretation of a conversation. It's not necessarily a verbatim account of what you said. So there's a big question in all of this as well as to whether they are good evidence. And I would argue that they're not really.
Mm, yeah. And a lot of people who find themselves in that situation, it seems to have the effect of just re-traumatising them, because the trial is bad enough, but then having to go through the counselling notes as well and defend what you're saying. But at the same time, then, is the neat and easy solution to just ban the use of these notes, or is that practically possible?
I don't think you could ever ban them outright, and that is because, I guess, if you think about, if you're going to ban an entire category of evidence, that means that that category of evidence could never be used in a trial setting. So you'd be saying that there's no context whatsoever in which that those types of notes could ever be relevant. That's very difficult to say. It's impossible to say that there would never be a case where these notes might be relevant. So I think an outright ban would be problematic, particularly because of constitutional fair trial rights of the defence, where if there is something that's relevant in evidence constitutionally, because you have a right to a fair trial, you do have an argument to have access to it. But what we do need to ensure is that our law restricts the use of this evidence in as far as possible.
Mm. Now, could you give us an example? I know, a fictional one. What kind of a situation might these notes be relevant?
I guess it's hard to say, I suppose, because in my view, I think those cases are likely to be very, very rare. But I guess if I was defence counsel, I might say, you know, we know that in counselling, actually, the complainant said that it was X person that committed the crime and not my client. That might be an example. I suppose that's one of maybe the most clear-cut types of examples of where there's maybe a flat contradiction in the notes of what might have been given in a statement. But again, you know, there would be some element perhaps of a fishing expedition to try to get to the bottom of that, you know, to say, look, we think there might be material like that in those notes. So they would be very, very rare. But I suppose what you don't want is to bring in a piece of legislation that's too restrictive, that ends up being challenged in the Supreme Court and ultimately struck down, and then you're right back to square one where you've no regulation for a period of time.
Yeah.
So I think what's probably better is that you have a system where we really tightly regulate the use of both disclosure but also admissibility. So that you regulate disclosure, i.e. whether the defence can access them, but then you also have another step in the process when you regulate how they can be used in a trial, i.e. once you've looked, if the defence do get access to look at them, that then there's another step where they say, look, we want to ask these questions about these notes to the complainant in the trial. And again, that the judge would have to approve that again. It adds another layer of protection for the complainant. Now, it is still problematic because obviously you know at that stage your notes have been seen and there's an intrusion there, but you might be able to minimise some of the trauma because you'll limit the questions that can be asked of the person.
Yeah, somebody's texting in to say, as a psychiatrist, I would feel that the notes should not ever be released to the defence of the court. Often patients are very distressed at the thought of their notes being read by the court or included in the book of evidence, where the alleged perpetrator can also have access to the notes. Would that be the case, that the accused could have that access?
That would be very tightly controlled. They would certainly not get just a copy of the notes. And it is particularly if it's gone through the trial process, the pre-trial hearing where a judge has given the permission. The judge will be very strict on when the notes can be seen, by whom, and certainly we wouldn't have, for example, a defendant getting a full copy of the notes to use as they would. They may be able to discuss it with their lawyer or see a redacted piece of it, but if it's gone through the disclosure process, you would expect the judge to be quite strict on how they can be used and who would see them and when.
Yeah, and at the same time, if counsel for the defence is saying we want to see the notes because we believe the complainant said X, Y or Z, how can they know that, given that it's all happened in confidence?
That's the thing. And I guess cases differ. Maybe it would be a certain amount of information the person might have, or it could literally be a fishing expedition. I think at the root of all this is that we have come to a place where there's just an acceptance that these notes are now a part of the trial process, that they are evidence. And I think there is a broad discussion to be had about, you know, why do we think these notes should be part of a trial at all? What place should they have? So there is certainly, you know, a much bigger conversation to be had about it. And I do know that I would imagine that a lot of therapists who are aware of this practice probably have altered their note-taking practice as well, because they're conscious that these notes may be used.
Oh, yeah. We did talk to a councillor a couple of weeks ago, and she said she doesn't take notes anymore, just to be on the safe side. However, if there was an absolute ban, do you think then that might be seen to be unconstitutional and it'll end up in the Supreme Court?
I think potentially it could be. And I think, that's why I think we need to have a very careful consultation on all of this. You know, there is an argument that maybe you should just take away the waiver so that every single application to see counselling notes has to go through a hearing. Ultimately, I think that would greatly maybe reduce the use of these notes, because you would have to have a strong reason to ask a judge to see them. So, you know, after a process of time, it may be that there'd be fewer and fewer requests. So you might achieve the same effect without the constitutional vulnerability. But I do think that if there was a law which outright banned them, that it could be vulnerable to a constitutional challenge because of the fair trial rights of the accused. It may not happen immediately, but there may be the case where a defendant feels they have a really solid reason to use those notes or request them, and if they didn't have access to them, they may challenge the law.
Yeah, and does the defence need to prove, when they make this request, that we believe this information might be in the notes? Do they have to establish where that belief comes from?
I guess to satisfy a judge that, you know, if once it gets to hearing process. But the problem at the moment, Sean, is that a lot of these requests aren't getting as far as the hearing process at all, because complainants are giving their permission. But yes, I do think if you were going to a judge, and our recent Supreme Court judgment has made clear that it's not accepted by the judiciary that counselling notes should automatically be handed across to the defence, that they are a fundamental part of these trials, that they will be cautious about requests. It's not just a matter of requesting and you will get access. So yes, they would have to provide some sort of sound reasoning as to why they want the notes and what they expect to see in them. And then if they were going to say that, they, I guess, would have to show why they have that inkling that there is that information there.
Yeah. Now, does this also apply to not just notes from counselling sessions, but other sorts of records to do with the complainant?
Well, yes, that's another part of my work. So in Ireland, when we legislated for this, we focused on counselling notes. Our current legislation is modelled very closely on equivalent legislation in Canada. The Canadian legislation focuses on all personal records of a complainant. So that would include school records, social work files, basically medical records, basically anything that's personal information about an individual. So the other thing to consider is, even if we get things right with counselling notes, we will still have a whole raft of personal records that would still be might still be sought by the defence, and may be sought more frequently by the defence if access to counselling notes is ultimately restricted, as the hope might be. So my hope would be that when the legislature is looking at counselling notes, they might also consider the other types of personal records that may be equally problematic from a complainant's point of view in terms of revealing personal information and then the trauma that goes along with that in a trial process if you're being questioned on it. So we were very focused when we legislated for this on counselling records, quite rightly, but I think we do need to think about all of these other records as well, and whether we should move ahead and also regulate access to those records.
One final question, Susan, from one of the listeners. And it's this: if the counsellor doesn't keep notes, then can they be called to give direct evidence?
I'm not sure. I've never seen that happen. Mm. And I don't think so, because that you'd kind of be getting into the ground of hearsay there.
Yeah.
So it's someone giving the voice of somebody else. And I do know anecdotally that a lot of counsellors have obviously curtail the notes they take. That's not necessarily a bad practice either. I think everybody who documents, anyone who documents anybody with personal information, should be mindful of how much personal information they are keeping about that person and what they need to keep for the purposes of doing their job. I guess we're all more mindful of that now with GDPR and all of this, but particularly in a medical context or a therapeutic context, or when you know you're engaging with somebody who is or may be a complainant in a criminal trial, you should be mindful of the information you were documenting about them.
Susan, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Susan Leahy, Associate Professor at the School of Law in the University of Limerick.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.